and welcome to Brewers Monday, the official podcast of the Brewers Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Ruhrink. A little later, we're going to have Ron Beaver. He's the president of the Michigan AFL-CIO. But first, John, it's Labor Day, which means that it's maybe a chance to just take a deep breath before we really dive into the general election. Allegedly.
Allegedly. Take a deep breath and get yourself ready for those 2 days of session we're going to have next week.
2 days of session, and one of the big questions is, are the Republicans going to look into taking up the paid sick leave ballot proposal and the minimum wage ballot proposal? Both of them are citizens' initiative, and according to the Constitution, legislature gets first crack at these things. They have 40 days to do something. Clock on paid sick leave is ending on Friday. It's very possible that they could do something, and we just recently asked our insiders what they think.
A very slight majority think that they are going to come back and they're going to deal with it. We have 42% roughly think they're going to come back and they're going to deal with it. 38% say no, they're going to chicken out at the last minute and kind of leave it to the voters to decide.
So a small plurality think that they're going to do something about it. There is an advantage from a practical standpoint on the business community side as to why they would want to do this. As far as it being a political advantage, our readers who responded to our flash poll don't really believe that this is going to be any political advantage.
No, I think the plurality say it's not going to help the Republicans retain the House, and a slightly smaller percent think, yeah, well, maybe, yeah, it could change the turnout in November enough to make a difference and a positive difference for the Republicans.
But doing this is not for the politics. This is all about the policy.
This is all about the policy, and I suspect, and I don't know this from any specific source, but I suspect if you sort of look at what's been happening with the ballot proposals, the business community is probably pushing for this to be dealt with. They can at least amend it. Our polls and surveys have shown really strong support for this earned sick leave proposal and for the minimum wage proposal. If the legislature does move on it, they can at least change some of the more onerous aspects of it later on in the session if they choose to. I also find it interesting, and again, I did a story recently with Rich Studley over at the Chamber, and you notice they're not going to have a unified no campaign. Sounds like they're really not going to weigh in on any of these ballot proposals, and I kind of wonder if this isn't their strategy. Rather than going into a PR war to shut down all the proposals, let's just take care of what we can take care of from a legislative perspective, and then let happen what happens with voters, not politicians, and with recreational marijuana.
Well, and I talked to Ron Beaver about this earlier, and we'll hear that interview in this podcast a little later. There's so many things to spend money on, and there's only a certain amount of money to spend.
Oh, yeah.
So that's kind of the problem the chamber, the unions have as well, both parties have. And really, the focus is on governor. I mean, that's really the big ball of wax.
Well, there's so much difference that the governor can make in terms of what the business community can get or what the labor community can get. If their person is in the office, it's a huge difference. It's so much more important than even the small issues like the minimum wage. I don't want to say they're small, but you know what I mean? It's just a more narrow issue than what a governor can have his or her hands in and influence upon. So.
And I'm not saying the Republicans or the business community is letting go of the rope on Bill Schuette as the Republican gubernatorial hopeful, but based on our flash poll here, the presumption is that Gretchen Whitmer is going to be our next governor.
Yeah, and it was a pretty big margin too. We've got 63.6%. And you remember those? These are sort of the insiders, the folks who subscribe to MERS. I guess you'd call them inside the Beltway. Mm-hmm. They're not always, take no offense, my friends, but they're not always truly in tune with the voters. We kind of do live in a little bit of a bubble. But they also recognize the importance of history. We've talked about it before. Mm-hmm. For 40 years, what have we done in Michigan with the gubernatorial race? It's swung. We give the one party their full 8-year run. We turn it over to the next party. We give them their full run. We go back the next year, the next cycle, and give it to the other party. It's time for the gavel to go from the office to go from the R's to the D's, if you look at history.
I mention this because if you're the chamber, if you're other Republican sympathizing entities, I think that there may be a concentrated effort to make sure that the Senate and the House, at least one or the other, is kept in Republican hands. Because if both go, you know, if you play in too much stuff, they both go, the ballot proposals pass, then you're looking at a rough at least 2 years if you're a Republican or a Republican sympathizer.
Oh yeah, it would be a change. It's certainly a change in climate for them, wouldn't it be? I mean, that you want to at least have one chamber, a backstop, someplace you can stop really bad legislation. If they lost the House, the Senate, and the governor's office, it would be an entirely different climate.
We had some other questions in this poll. You're pulling up the one here on who you think will win the race for attorney general. And we had just looked at governor, and 66% thought the Democrat was going to win. We get to attorney general, and it's a bit different.
It's a tie. It's a tie. Right now, and this might change a little bit, but we have roughly 167 voters say Dana Nessel will win. We have 168. So there's a one-vote difference there. I mean, that's how close it is. That's, you know, for a poll, that's kind of remarkable. For a long time, it was exactly the same. So people are undecided about who's going to win this attorney general's race.
What makes this really interesting is that in years past, when the seats have been open, usually if the governor's race went strong one way, then that candidate's party usually did well on the other positions on the ticket. But maybe not so. Maybe Tom Leonard's able to break away and make this an individual race for himself.
And what does it mean if this independent candidate winds up on the ballot?
Oh, Graveland, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what does he do to the mix?
And if he's able to get some footing and, you know, let's say he gets 5% of the vote, where do you think that 5% is probably going to come out of?
Where does he pull from? I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Well, if Barb McQuaid is supporting him, I'm not going to assume that it's the Republicans who are going in his corner, but I guess we don't know. You know, it's just kind of like libertarians. I mean, sometimes they pull from Democrats just like Republicans. So what else did we find out through the survey, John?
We asked our readers whether they thought President Trump coming to Michigan would help Bill Schuette in November. We have 30.4% said, yeah, he would actually help out the Schuette campaign. 51.2% said, no, Trump, don't come. You're going to hit your candidate there.
You know, I was really surprised by that one, John, because I'm of that minority in that particular poll. I still feel like if they did it the right way in the right areas of the state, it seems like they would help him. Because I don't feel like the people who are going to come out to vote because they don't like Trump, they're going to come out anyway. And you're trying to build enthusiasm. You're trying to get people out to vote. It's not like he's going to persuade undecideds. You just got to help enthusiasm.
You are probably right if you placed it in the right geographical region that he might actually help turn out where the candidate needs to turn out. I kind of wonder when you look at this poll result and another question we're going to talk about here in a minute, the sort of inside the beltway people that read MERS that follow us, if there's just not a little bit more Trump fatigue than there probably is out in the general public at large. Because I'm going to guess, and I could be wrong, but I'm going to guess most of our readers are probably pretty voracious consumers of national news, and they're probably a little tired of that Twitter back and forth. The coverage of every little skirmish that's going on seems almost hyper-partisan, hyper-inflated these days. So they're probably more fatigued than the average voter who doesn't pay that close attention to it.
Yeah, that could very well be. And so this leads into the other question that we asked.
I was real curious. We talked about this a little bit. Obviously, in the primary, candidates have a different strategy. Bill Schuette had a strategy of really wrapping himself around the Trump flag, or wrapping the Trump flag around himself. So we asked the question, did Bill Schuette's doing that, is that gonna help or hurt him? In lieu of the fact that the president's personal lawyers pled guilty, in light of the fact that his former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, has been convicted on 8 counts, is that going to hurt him? Does that evolution of that legal challenge, that legal swamp that the president's kind of finding himself in? We have about 51.8% said the fact that he tied himself so closely is going to cost him votes in November. And then we had 33% said, no, it's not going to cost him any votes. And 15% said, well, I don't know.
So we had mentioned earlier that a strong majority of our readers who responded to our flash survey believe Gretchen Whitmer is going to win. Part of the reason here clearly is Donald Trump and his problems. But there's another reason, too, that we talked about in this poll that I think may be more striking. And that was your question on which message will resonate better. The Bill Schuette mantra of rolling back the income tax to 3.9%, the rate that it was before Jennifer Granholm raised it, or fixing the damn roads. And this one was not even close.
Oh, it was out of the ballpark. It's 75% of our readers think Gretchen really nailed the issue that has the most appeal, and that's fix the damn roads. And we're kind of reminded of it every time we pull out of MERS here, or pull into MERS here, and go down Butler Avenue and almost lose ourselves in the tank trap that's developed in the middle of that road over there. 13.6% said, you know, let's cut that income tax. That's the key that's going to get you the win. 75% said, no, that's not going to get you the win. The people want the damn roads fixed.
Any other questions we had here, John?
Well, we did ask if Barack Obama coming to Michigan would help the Democratic nominee, Gretchen Whitmer. And 64% said Obama would help Gretchen Whitmer. I suspect what happens with all of our presidents after they're out of office for 2 or 4 years, they start to have a better look. They appeal more to us than they did when they were in office. Mm-hmm. I think that's clearly happening with President Obama. And that's pretty much that was our 8 questions. We covered them.
Boy, we had some good response for a dead week before Labor Day, too. What, you had over 400,
I was surprised. We put it out Monday right around lunchtime. And I think by 5 o'clock Monday afternoon, we had 310 responses.
Oh, that's great.
We're well over 400 now, so...
Well, that's a good reflective sample then of the Lansing community then, and the folks who cover state government and follow it on a regular basis.
It should go without saying, but in case you're curious, this is not a scientific poll. It's just a survey.
Just a survey. Yeah. We're kind of doing this for fun.
Doing it for fun, seeing what our readers think.
All right. Well, let's move on to the next segment of our podcast and talk with Ron Bieber. All right, joining me now is the president of the AFL-CIO here in the state of Michigan, Ron Bieber. Happy Labor Day, Ron.
Happy Labor Day to you, Kyle. Thank you for having me on your show.
Appreciate you being available again for our Labor Day edition. I wanted to touch on first something that may not be crystal clear to our listeners, and that is the AFL-CIO is an umbrella organization for a number of unions and not a union itself.
Yeah, we're an umbrella organization. We have affiliated unions that join together so that, frankly, our strength in the labor movement has always been in the power of our numbers of acting collectively. So we have 52 affiliated unions that belong to the AFL, and we do that to come together and decide on policy and political strategy and work together to elect labor-friendly candidates. So we've got over 1 million active and retired members in the state, and as I said, our power has always been in our numbers, and our strength has always been in our solidarity with each other and working together to have each other's backs.
It's been fun to do these on this day in Michigan histories and see some of the history behind the AFL and the CIO, and then they were apart and they were together again. And now, obviously, they're together again. UAW's big member here. Clearly, the plan is to flex muscle and be in solidarity with one another to advance the causes that you guys are looking for. Well, it's 2018, and Ron, tell me what you think is the state of organized labor on this Labor Day.
I came here to the AFL 3 years ago, and our number one priority was to grow and strengthen the labor movement in Michigan, and I think we've done that.
Really? Even with right to work and everything?
Absolutely. Last year, Michigan gained 52,000 new union members. That's 52,000. And these numbers some years go down 5,000, up 5,000. 52,000 members last year came in, and that is in a right to work environment. So I'll say this. The Republicans who passed right to work thought that they were putting the stake in labor's heart in this state and thought they were going to kill us off. It's had the exact opposite effect. That on top of 8 years of Republican nonstop attacks on working people in the legislature has done nothing but energize the labor movement in this state. And I'd say our solidarity is stronger and our members are more energized than ever to make change in this state and make change in Lansing to promote a working person's agenda.
What do you think the reaction has been to the approval of the prevailing wage elimination citizens initiative?
Terrible. Absolutely terrible. Few things that they have done have stuck in my craw like repealing prevailing wage.
Really? Why is that?
Repealing prevailing wage is nothing more than taking money out of working people's pockets and put it into corporate pockets. Indiana passed it a few years ago. There was a big study done, and the Republicans claimed that repealing prevailing wage would save all these taxpayer dollars. Everywhere they've done it, study after study has shown it does not save taxpayers a nickel. The only thing it does is take money away from working people and put it into the pockets of wealthy corporations. And I think that's wrong. We need workers to make a decent, fair wage that they can raise a family and sustain themselves. And it was unnecessary, but they did it.
As the labor movement is taking a look at this coming election, the 2018 election, do you feel like that move has energized your members more than even they would have been otherwise?
Absolutely. I mean that was just the latest straw. It's for 8 years they've attacked working people with their agenda, pro-corporate agenda in Lansing, and prevailing wage was totally unnecessary. The facts don't bear out the argument, and you know, there's a long list. It's been a hard time here in Lansing for working people to get a fair shake since the 2010 Republican takeover of this town, and it's time for a change.
So let's talk about that change. Obviously, we had the Democratic Convention last weekend. Gretchen Whitmer, Garland Gilchrist, Dana Nessel, and Joslyn Benson's the ticket. How are you guys feeling about that ticket?
Great, really great. We've got a great, diverse ticket on the Democratic side in this state. As you know, we were in convention last weekend, and our members were more energized than I've seen them in a long, long time.
Is that right? And because Nina Nessel wasn't your first choice there for AG.
Well, no, she wasn't, honestly. We had made a different choice. Frankly, we didn't endorse in that race going into the first convention until 2 days before that convention. So Dana Nessel or Pat Miles would have been fine with us. It was just that more of the members thought, for whatever reason, that they wanted to support Pat Miles. But Dana's going to be a great champion for working people. Our members are totally energized around this ticket.
Let's talk about the House and the Senate. What odds are you putting on a flip for the Democrats in either chamber?
I won't make a prediction on the odds.
Oh, Ron, come on. That'd be fun.
I will say that I am feeling very, very good. The one caution I will say is this blue wave. I hate that term.
Why is that?
I think it's a trick. I think it's a trap to say that, you know, it's just going to happen. The Democrats are just going to sweep everything, and so you don't have to do anything. It's just gonna magically appear. I don't believe in that waves happen because of a whole lot of ripples that get caused out there. And by those ripples, I mean the things that we're going to do. Talk to our members about the issues. Talk to our members about the best candidates that will protect raising wages and quality health care for all and quality education and voting rights and election rights, civil rights, worker rights. And I think that our members are energized to do the work to make a whole bunch of ripples out there that will turn into a wave, but we've got to do the work in order to make sure that we elect pro-working family members to the legislature.
Michael Cohen, Paul Manafort, it just seems like the dominoes keep falling there for Donald Trump. With that type of negative publicity on the Republican president, it seems like that would help out the Democrats and ensure this blue wave, don't you think?
I think that the environment has been set up for us to have a very good election day on November 6th. Still, I mean, people want to be informed and people need to make educated decisions on which candidates are the ones that will have their backs in the legislature, and we're going to do that work. But I do not disagree. The national politics has laid the table and plowed the fields, that if we plant the seeds, I think we'll be very fruitful come November 6th.
As you know, the Senate is 27-11 on the Republican side. Is the field looking that good that you guys can play for majority in that chamber?
Well, I would say this. It should be, but because Michigan is one of the most gerrymandered and unfair district drawn states in the country, I think that it's rigged against us. We're going to pick up seats in the Senate. There is no two ways about that. Can we get enough to get majority with the rigged system that the Republicans have done, gerrymandering this state against us? I'm not sure, but we need to fix that too. There's a proposal on the ballot to fix the redistricting process in this state, and hopefully the voters will see the wisdom in that and pass that. And then, you know, we just want a fair shot. It's not right that in this state, the majority of people vote for Democrats, and yet we get a minority of the seats. It's rigged, and we need to fix it.
You're feeling more bullish about maybe the chances of flipping the House, maybe?
Absolutely. We need 9 seats, and I can count them for you over and over of where I think that we can do that. The House is gerrymandered too. Don't think that it's not. But yeah, I could definitely see November 7th where Democrats are elected to a majority in the House.
A lot of things on the ballot here, so a lot of things that would take a lot of resources. Obviously, Gretchen Whitmer, you got Attorney General, Secretary of State, House and Senate, Supreme Court, these ballot proposals. What is the top priority for the AFL-CIO when it comes to the elections?
Well, we've been saying all along that getting Gretchen Whitmer elected as governor is our top priority, and it's going to remain that, but not far behind are all the other things that you mentioned. This, we need to get a fair Supreme Court in this state, and I think that we have a great chance of electing 2 new Supreme Court justices that will bring fairness to that court. The House, obviously, is a priority. The Attorney General Office and the Secretary of State Office are high priorities, and reelecting Senator Stabenow is a high priority, but I don't honestly think she's going to have much trouble, but we want all of them.
Well, you know, on the Supreme Court, you take a look at what you have there, and Beth Clement and David Viviano seem to have got a working majority with the 2 Democratic-nominated justices on there, Bridget McCormick and Richard Bernstein. Does that knock it down the list a little bit? Because the Republicans, some conservative Republicans would say, Democrats already have a majority on the Supreme Court, functionally.
A working majority, maybe on some issues, but when it comes down to hardline issues, I'm not sure that that working majority holds. There's been a few issues where they've pulled together and done the right thing, but every study that I see shows that Michigan State is one of the most politicized in the country, and that's not right. Justice should be blind, and a working person should be able to go in our court and get a fair shake, and I don't think that's the way it is with the current makeup.
Other thing I wanted to ask you about is this movement that we're seeing on the Republican side in the business community to do something early with the minimum wage increase, $12 an hour, and the paid sick leave citizens proposal. Now, if the legislature doesn't do anything by the end of next week or this coming week here, the paid sick leave proposal will go automatically on the ballot. Minimum wage, there's some question as to when the timeline is for that. But what do you think about that? The legislature adopting either of these ballot proposals with the presumption that maybe they'll come back later in the session and make some changes?
I think it's absolutely dirty political tricks by the Republicans in the legislature once again to circumvent the will of the people. Those ballot proposals will have qualified for the ballot most likely by that time, but they're going to come back if they pass those with the intent of messing around with those and weakening them, because they can if they pass it through the legislature. That's more Republican dirty tricks, and I hope the citizens of this state make those legislators pay for those actions. That is just wrong. It's undemocratic. If they do it, they know why they're doing it, and it's just dirty.
Now, I was speaking with a group of servers yesterday, the Restaurant Workers of America. They say, hey, actually, we'd like the minimum wage ballot proposal taken up because we want to split this tax or this tip credit from the minimum wage, and these are working folks. I'd like to see something a little different. What's your message back to that as to why you still don't want to take up early that minimum wage increase?
if you could trust the Republicans in the legislature that they were going to do the right thing, if they were passing it for the right reasons to actually increase wages for working people, then I'd say do it. Thank you, and we'll move on, and we'll move on to other issues to help working people. I do not trust their intent with this, and I think if they pass it, it's only going to be because they want to weaken it later in the legislature, which they can do if they pass it. They can do it with a simple majority instead of a two-thirds majority, which they'd have to do if it passes on the ballot. And I understand the argument, and it's going to be tricky if they actually take it up. I'm not sure what I say. Do I say go in there and vote against a minimum wage increase when I want a minimum wage right. increase? So it's going to make the messaging messy or tricky. But again, if I trusted their intent, I would say pass it and thank you. But I just don't trust it. We've seen this from them before.
Okay, so I know you've thought about this before. Gretchen Whitmer's elected. The Senate and the House both go Democratic. The first thing you'd like to see them take up is?
It's a toss-up. I mean, we can set aside fixing the damn roads because she will do that, and that's what the voters want. So set that aside. Three issues that I think are key labor issues. Right to work, obviously. It was just wrong to do it. There was no reason to do it, and I'd like to see that repealed. Prevailing wage, as I talked about earlier, I think that was a travesty, especially with the trade shortage in this state, to attack the working people that do those skilled trade jobs. So I'd like to see prevailing wage restored right away. The third one, I think, is the pension tax. I thought that was just a travesty to our retired working people in this state, to give wealthy corporations, a $2 billion tax cut, and then to throw a tax on the pensions of people who had planned out their whole senior years and then had that put on working people to pay for a corporate tax cut was just wrong. So those would be probably my top three.
Ron Bieber, he is the president of the Michigan AFL-CIO. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you, Kyle, so much. Happy Labor Day.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. And if this podcast went up, that means that I successfully completed the Dahlmack bike event up to Mackinac City. You know, I know we just passed that law, John, not too long ago, but I've seen a big difference out on the road as far as cars, like, giving you space. And it's not 3 feet. They're, like, giving me, like, 20 feet. It's, like, fantastic. I love it. So thank you to all the drivers out there who are giving bikers some space. I always try and get as far to the right as humanly possible. I don't like being an obstruction, and I really appreciate the extra space that they give me out there. And as the cop in Mackinac City told me when I ran a stop sign, don't do that. Follow all the rules. He was going to give me a ticket when I rolled through that stop sign. He was a real stickler about that.
You want your law enforcement people to be law and order types, right?
I guess so. And since we're taping this early, before the bike event, no lawnmower, John.
There is no lawnmower. And I want to do a special shout out. I met last week with Rick Alvarez. He works for the state. Frequent listener to our podcast. I get the sense he enjoys the back and forth at the tail end of the podcast and the musing about the lawnmower.
Well, he would have had a real fun looking at my face last podcast when that thing fired up about halfway through our podcast. And I could hardly hear myself think.
It's just a unique attribute. You just gotta roll with it, man.
As my wife says, I get riled up about some of the stupidest things, but that's one of the things that riles me up, stupid or not. All right, well, thanks for listening. Thanks to AT&T for this and all our other podcasts. Thanks to Ron Bieber for taking time, Ryan for helping us out and setting that up. Until next week, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.